from St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
Let's go back to some of those policies, to that peace and prosperity that we had some 4 to 5 years ago.
Everywhere is Democratic country once this Democrat's been there.
There are a lot of things in Washington that are very bipartisan, including some bills that I've already gotten passed.
And I think it works best when you can see both sides, but you have to pick one, and I firmly align with the Republicans.
But certainly, I think if she's running against one of the crazy dudes, certainly it's going to be a lot easier.
But I'll take wisdom and age and a few missteps in oral to over somebody who has no substance.
I believe that you represent the party's values and you move forward, and that's what I have done.
Hi, everybody. This is Jason Rosenbaum, a political correspondent with St. Louis Public Radio. Earlier this week, I had a chance to talk with former state legislator and former St. Charles County Judge Ted House. I was interested in getting his take on this month's municipal elections there, especially since St. Charles County voters rejected a property tax freeze and conservative candidates to the Francis Howell School Board. House was involved in a lot of education-related issues in St. Charles County this election cycle, and he has a long memory about the fast-growing area's political trajectory. I first asked the Democratic official about how he got involved in Missouri politics and why he decided to call St. Charles County home.
Well, thank you, Jason, for inviting me to be here. My political mentor was Congressman Ike Skelton. I grew up in, started in Lee Summit, but then grew up in Fayette in central Missouri. And I had the opportunity to work for Congressman Skelton in and around my law school experience at UMKC. And so I learned an awfully lot from Congressman Skelton as his campaign manager and then as his field representative. I really wanted to be a lawyer, though, so went to law school in Kansas City at UMKC. And was always kind of had the political bug. My father was interested in history. And I just, when I moved to St. Charles, after graduating from law school, there was an opportunity to run for the Missouri House of Representatives. So, I ran in the new area of St. Charles County. If I'd been in the old area, you had to be a fourth generation St. Charles.
What was the new area? Exactly?
Well, just south down Highway 94 and Heritage and Harvester. And
what brought you to St. Charles in the first place?
The law firm to work for. I did not know one soul in St. Charles County when I moved there in 1986.
And what was it like in 1986? I imagine there were fewer people than there are now.
There were about half the people we've got now, but it was definitely already growing. And I was a part of that influx who said, this is the coolest place in the world to start a life, a family, a career. What a great place. So I was fortunate. I ran for a state representative, worked my tail off, knocked on thousands and thousands of doors and won that election and served in the House for 6 years, then ran for Senate and defeated a Republican incumbent in 1994 and served in the Missouri Senate for 8 years. And then, of course, the term limits clock started ticking in 1994. So I was out of the Senate after 8 years, along with all of the folks who'd been there a lot longer than I had. And then I decided to run for judge. I thought I would really enjoy that. And I ran for associate circuit judge first in St. Charles County in 2002, won that, and then ran for circuit judge in 2004. And I was fortunate to be elected circuit judge, and so I served as a judge in St. Charles County for 18 years, and then my final term expired in 2020, and I decided after 32 years in elected office that was enough. So that's a quick rundown.
No, that's a good rundown. So the fact is you defeated an incumbent state senator, Republican state senator, in 1994, which was a horrible year for Democrats.
Yes.
So you managed to win re-election in 1998.
Yes.
And then your seat flipped as soon as you left. John Dolan, I think, took over for you, correct?
That's right.
So how were you able to win that?
Well,
besides magic or sorcery.
I worked my tail off. for one thing. Campaigned very hard, as Ike Skelton taught me to do. Knocked on thousands and thousands of doors. There were other elected Democrats in St. Charles County at the time that I started. You know, we had countywide offices and other a few other Democrat state legislators. So, you know, having the D by your name wasn't the problem that it became later. Still, you're still running an uphill battle and still had to work harder than your opponent. But, you know, I just was I wasn't married yet. I had time to campaign and go to things and be everywhere and meet all kinds of people and you know, and as a moderate Democrat, you know, I mean, you have the opportunity to succeed in that electorate. And I wanted to be when I was in the legislature, I was a member of the majority party, so I was able to deliver for the people of St. Charles County. You know, we got money for our public schools. We built the Page Avenue Bridge, you know, Route 364 extension. Worked very hard on that, worked on economic development, creating jobs, helping St. Charles County thrive and take advantage of its unique position of growth and prosperity that it continues to enjoy. And so I think by working hard to represent people in a way that really made a difference in their lives, you're able to get reelected. And then, but when you become a judge, of course, then it's not partisan or political. You have to, unfortunately, St. Charles County, you know, is the largest county in Missouri that still elects its circuit judges.
And
that's a whole nother
conversation. Probably never going to be part of the Missouri plan at this point. I mean, it might be if it's done against its will. How are you a moderate Democrat? Like, what were ways that you were more moderate than, say, like the National Democratic Party?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's hard to label yourself. I'd rather other people do it and just let them
decide.
Were
you just against abortion rights? Were you against gun control? Were you leery of gay marriage? Those are usually the three litmus tests that set, like, that cause a Democrat to be called moderate or conservative.
Yeah, you've got the social issues. You've got the you know, economically. I mean, certainly very conservative fiscally. I think for good reason. Obviously, you know, fiscally conservative. I did work hard to protect unborn children, and so that was, you know, I think that was something that was very important to me personally.
And that was similar to like what Ike Skelton was. Ike Skelton was against abortion rights. He was against gun control, but he was also very pro-union, and he also, you know, represented a lot of counties that had traditional Democratic leanings, but he also represented a lot of counties that were very Republican, too.
Yeah.
The fact, even when I was working for the Columbia Tribune, I would look at the fact he was winning with 65% of the vote, and I'm like, how is he doing this? Because there are some areas which were voting for W. Bush and Republicans, state legislators, by a lot,
so
basically.
The answer to that question, Jason, is I mirrored the people of St. Charles County about as well as any legislator could. And I don't say that to congratulate myself or, you know,
yeah, you could congratulate yourself. That's okay. But continue.
When, you know, I knocked on so many doors, talked to so many people, worked so hard, I felt like I knew the people of St. Charles County better than anybody possibly could. And I was able to be successful because I reflected the values of the people of St. Charles County. I'm very proud of my 100% AFL-CIO labor COPE voting record in 14 years in the legislature, and I believe very strongly in social and economic justice for working families. And even on guns, you mentioned, you know, Second Amendment. Now, today, of course, it's a whole different dynamic in terms of what the NRA is up to. You know, I would not claim any association with today's NRA that's against common sense.
Like background checks.
Yes, exactly.
Or you know, machine guns are already illegal, but just saying, like, just being so against any restrictions on guns, that
which is irrational for them to do that and dangerous, I think. But at the time, we're talking 30 years ago, really the main issue was concealed carry, which I supported, and
which I think every state has now, even Illinois has it, and it's not really as controversial, although some states have conceal and carry where you have to get a permit and you get like criminal penalties if you are caught without one. Like, there have been people in New Jersey and New York who go to jail for 2 years because of that. And then here, there's no permit. And if you're caught with a gun and you're not a felon and you're not doing anything with it, I don't really think it's a crime here, basically. But
and
continue.
That to me was, you know, rational at the time, that in a, you know, that under the U.S. Constitution, people have the right to keep and bear arms. So, I mean, and so I was pro-gun. I would have called my, 30 years ago, I would have called myself pro-gun. Okay.
Yeah, but even
that's a different conversation.
But even
today.
On abortion, so I'm going to this conversation is going to be a little bit backwards looking, but it also will be forward looking. When I started covering the legislature, there were a lot of anti-abortion rights Democratic legislators, but they were not talking about banning all abortions. They were not talking about banning all abortions, even in the case of rape or incest. Even Republicans, like Matt Blunt, was not for banning abortions in the case of rape or incest. And I think that they all were pretty clear-eyed that with Roe v. Wade in place, a total ban was just not possible. I think, though, when Trump got elected and he appointed new Supreme Court judges, and when he specifically said, I'm going to appoint judges that are going to be antagonistic to Roe versus Wade, it seemed like things changed, went into a much more maximalist direction. And I think that's maybe why you can explain why St. Charles voted for Amendment 3, because there may be people who are leery or morally opposed to abortion, but I don't think they're at the level where they want it banned in basically every circumstance. It's more of an observation than a question, but feel free to bump off of that, basically.
Well, here's where we are today, I think, Jason, and that is the legislators that we have in St. Charles County today, they're all Republicans. Every elected official in St. Charles County is a Republican today, right? Our legislators do not represent the values of the people of St. Charles County. I mean, if I had one message to share in this conversation, I mean, it would be my concern about that. And it's obvious by the way the people vote when the partisan politics is not part of the equation and they just get an issue. If, you know, if it's right to work or Medicaid expansion or, you know, an issue that they can vote on. The people of St. Charles County are very middle of the road, moderate, whatever label we want to use, you know. And our legislators, because of gerrymandering and the primary system and all of that, you know, are far to the right of where the people are. And in the things they're trying to do right now, you know, with attacking our public schools constantly and vouchers and privatizing and fragmentizing our schools and defunding our public schools. And I mean, that's the people of St. Charles County have proven time and time again, as they did, you know, on April the 7th, that they support public education and support our schools. And yet our legislators are doing everything they can to undermine public education, such as trying to make the elections partisan in St. Charles County, which is a terrible idea. Have candidates for school board run as Democrats and Republicans, put the elections in November, where, you know, they become nationalized and they're influenced by all the baggage around the presidential election and all of that. And so I just don't think our current legislators are serving the people of St. Charles County well, and there needs to be some balance brought into that.
So let's talk about let's shift gears to the elections last Tuesday. We'll start with the school board elections, because this is the second election in a row where I will just classify them as conservative, because they have self-identified as conservative, have lost at Francis Howell.
Actually, the third in a row.
And this one, I think, was the most resounding. There have been several people who have pointed out that if you look at precinct data, this was not an example of just the eastern side of St. Charles County overwhelming the western side. The western side actually gravitated toward, and I'm not going to call them the progressive or liberal side because they don't identify as that, because I think that they're actually trying to get Republicans on their side. They are just not identifying themselves as conservative. Like, it was not even close this time around. Like, what do you attribute this to? I have my theories, and I've talked to several other people, but I'd be interested in your view on why it's moving in this direction on the school board issue.
So I need 30 minutes to answer that, but I'll do my best. You know, there was a two-tiered approach by the Republicans, the right wing, to, and I hate to use the labels too, but I don't, it's just for sake of conversation.
Apparently
here,
they put the word conservative on their signs.
Conservatives, yeah.
So I feel like it's okay to label them as conservative, okay. But continue.
You know, labels mean different things to different people. But the right-wing culture warriors took over some of the school boards. And I think there was I never was a big conspiracy theory person, but it's obvious. It just unfolded before our eyes what they were doing, became very obvious. The first step was to undermine the confidence of the people in public education through the culture wars, you know, CRT, we're teaching that everywhere, you know, whatever that is. You know, our schools are teaching our kids to hate America, you know, all this nonsense. And they've got litter boxes in the halls to accommodate kids that, you know, identify as felines.
No one can ever point to a specific example of that.
It never happened. I mean, all this culture war nonsense. But it was to undermine the confidence of people in public schools so that in step two, then you could defund public education through vouchers and making it more difficult for schools to pass revenue increases.
Yeah, but to interrupt you for a second, I feel like that's an especially bad strategy in St. Charles County because St. Louis County has a very big private school infrastructure. They have some of the best private schools in not only the state, but some in the nation. Correct me if I'm wrong, there are not a lot of private schools in St. Charles County, right?
Actually, there are some very good private schools in St. Charles County. You've got Duchesne High School and Lutheran High School and Christian High School
but people specifically move to St. Charles County because there are these large, well-regarded public schools, and people just may not want to pay out of pocket when they have a quote-unquote free option. It's not free. They're paying with property taxes. But I'm just saying that it's an entirely different thing to pay for school versus going to a public school. So it just seems like that's an odd strategy if that's their end goal.
Nothing the government provides is free. We need to establish that.
And I'm going to get into a tangent here. I get really irritated when people say that we have a free zoo and a free museum district.
Sure.
It's free for you,
right,
Mr. St. Charles County. And it is not free for me in St. Louis County.
And every legislator and elected official that's ever worked on a budget understands that or should understand that. But the foundation of this whole idea is public education is the bedrock of democracy. A thriving community has got to have great public schools. And the people of St. Charles County intuitively understand that. And that's, you know, ask any real estate agent, what's the first thing that a family cares about when they're moving into an area? It's do you have good schools? You know, that's critical for economic prosperity, for jobs, for the business community, for everybody. And so we got to start with that understanding about how the immense value that public education brings to our freedom and to our prosperity. And so you got to have great schools. And we do have great schools. And so we got to keep them that way. And that's why we don't want to divert the money to private schools. We have nothing against private schools. I say we've got some great schools. It's a great freedom that people should have if they want to send their kids to a private school or a Christian school or whatever. But don't take money away from the Francis Howell or the Fort Zumwalt School District to pay for it. So when this threat appeared and the right-wingers were taking over the school boards with their culture wars without the best interest of the kids in mind, or the parents, or the families, or the taxpayers, we formed St. Charles County Families for Public Schools, and that was me along with former superintendents Dr. Pam Sloan and Dr. Mary Hendricks Harris. We put that together and raised money to try to support candidates that support public education. Some other incredible grassroots organization, Francis Howell Forward, four moms that came together and developed this amazing grassroots group of volunteers that have made a big difference. I mean, you asked me how we've been able to turn this around. Other organizations, Missouri Citizens for Safe Communities, working with Tri-County Labor Club, the labor union, and other groups, education groups around the county and the various school districts. And it's such a large, it's well above a majority of citizens, and being able to communicate and campaign and work hard and tap into the feeling, a good feeling about public education that people of St. Charles County have.
My theory about why the anti-conservative candidates have done better is they've just gotten better organized. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that the conservative candidates have gotten worse organized or worse funded. I was talking with somebody who said that they were actually very well funded this time around. It's just like, this is just politics 101. It goes back to what you were talking about. It's getting people to run campaigns where these candidates actually meet people, have things like mailers, go to events, and try to win votes, as opposed to just hoping you win, basically.
So the conservatives overplayed their hand, and they're doing just what they're doing now in the legislature. The conservatives have overplayed their hand, and they did it with these school board candidates that, again, did not reflect the values of the community. They were way too far to the right. And what we were able to do with the, whatever you want to call us, moderate candidates or progressive candidates or whatever, some actually a lot of the candidates we've supported, most of them want nothing to do with partisan politics. They just care about kids and the community and supporting the teachers. But and that's, you know, the other side is trying to make us be the partisan ones, but we're the ones trying to get rid of the partisans because, you know, the St. Charles County Republican Central Committee has endorsed and supported a lot of these right-wing candidates. The St. Charles County Republican Central Committee, you know, was helping to fund Proposition RT, which would have been disastrous for our schools. And they've overplayed their hand. What we were able to do in terms of, yes, getting organized for sure with these grassroots organizations that a lot of them came up organically, but also just having great candidates, professionals, people that mirror the values of the district. And it's the first thing you need to do with a successful campaign is have a good candidate. Yeah. And we've got wonderful people that were just elected this last April 7 to the school boards, and I couldn't be happier with the quality of the people that ran. That really helps.
So I was talking with the CEO of the library system in St. Charles and county and city, and even he was surprised Prop RT failed 60-40. I think that they wanted it to fail.
Sure.
For various reasons. And they had to walk a pretty interesting tightrope because they are entities that are funded by property taxes. So they can't be as overtly partisan as, say, you or I. But they were surprised by the outcome. And I think when you look at it in context with the fact that Franklin and Jefferson counties both approved similar measures, something happened here that did not happen in those other places.
Right,
so
right.
What happened?
Well, we're still analyzing that. But I think it's because we got organized. And there are a lot of people who deserve a lot of credit for that. It was a teamwork. And the president of the Francis Howell School Board, Stephen Blair, was on this last summer trying to anticipate how we deal with this. The folks with Francis Howell Forward made Prop RT a very high priority. And if you had asked me, you know, 4 months ago, I was pretty skeptical about the ability to defeat Prop RT. I mean, I've been around politics long enough to know about the easiest thing to do in politics is to pass a tax cut. That doesn't take a lot of skill, you know. That's pretty easy to do. But the ballot language was confusing, for one thing. And someone said, why don't you challenge the ballot language? I said, why would I do that? It's so confusing. I think people will take one look at it and vote no because it's hard to tell what this exactly does. And of course, in the other counties, I don't think they had I don't think they thought they could do it. We thought we could beat it. And so about the middle of February, I'm going, you know, I think we can win this thing. I think we can actually defeat RT. And because you saw the opposition growing organically from the chambers of commerce, who figured out this is really bad for business.
Yeah, so that's one thing. And I think
even the Show Me Institute, now, you know, they came out against it. Now, their announcement was not exactly a ringing endorsement of public education.
No.
But they recognized it as terrible tax policy.
And I don't think ordinary voters were thinking this through, but this was put into a bill that also has stadium incentives. It has a tornado-related incentive, which, full disclosure, I applied for and am not gotten it because it's under litigation. But also the fact that it like only affects certain counties in certain ways. I think that some people are like, I don't think this is going to stand constitutionally.
Right. Well,
those would be like the very educated voters, but they would be like, I'm not getting super excited about something that may not actually happen, basically.
So there were folks saying, we really don't need to put a lot into defeating RT because it's going to be struck down in the courts because of the, you know, the way it treats counties differently and violates the Equal Protection Clause and perhaps even the single purpose clause of the bill, because the bill actually had to do with the chiefs in Kansas City, right, originally. But we felt that we couldn't take that chance, and we had to do everything we could to try to defeat RT. And people really responded to the once they had the facts. They're saying, hey, this is bad for schools. It's bad for fire. It's bad for ambulance. It's bad for the disability services community in St. Charles County. It's terrible for libraries. And yes, nobody likes paying property tax, but that's how you build a strong community.
What do you think of former Senator Igel saying there should be a redo of this in August because there would be a higher turnout?
Yeah. Well, that's why the Republicans are trying to put the school board elections and any tax levies or bond issues on the November ballot. Their argument is there'll be more voters. Yes, there would be more voters in November. And as a rule, more voters is a good thing. But, of course, their motivation, they didn't have any problem with April elections, you know, when they were winning. I think putting them on the November ballot nationalizes it and brings in all kinds of issues that are unrelated to education. And, of course, making the elections partisan, as this bill does, is terrible to have school administration become influenced so much by partisan politics. But to answer your question about what Senator Igel is trying to do, the legislation itself, the law itself, said it had to be put on the ballot by April of 2026. So maybe this is another legal issue that'll have to be hashed out in the courts, but I don't think there's any authorization to put it back on the ballot. And if they did, my prediction is, and I hate to make predictions on when we're being recorded here, my prediction is it will fail even higher, because typically that's what happens when you put something on the ballot and it passes or it fails, and then someone doesn't like the result and they put it on again, it's even more so the next time.
So, yeah, not to play whataboutism, although usually when people use that preface, they are about to do a whataboutism, but St. Louis County is doing exactly this with the use tax. St. Louis County voted down a use tax several years ago, and they're trying it again. And I think the difference here is a few years have passed, and they're trying to make the case now that it's really urgent because St. Louis County's budget is falling off a cliff. We're not talking about doing this literally in the next election. So I want to make that clear. But is there anything inherently wrong with voting on something again if enough time has passed?
No, there's not. And circumstances do change. Now, I don't think they're going to change between April of 2026 and August of 2026 with regard to the way voters and taxpayers, citizens feel about Prop RT. But I'm just saying, from my experience, it'll go down even bigger if they try to rush it back onto the ballot right away.
So here's the big $10,000 question. Can you extrapolate anything from these election results for November? Because there's going to be some competitive state legislative races, especially for the House.
Right.
It's kind of an open question about... It's kind of an open question about, you know, how is St. Charles County going to react to a do-over of Amendment 3? Because as I mentioned before, St. Charles County approved of the old Amendment 3 that legalized abortion. Is this a sign that, like, Democrats are making headway? Or is this just a sign that these specific situations happen, but you can't glean any larger things from it?
Right. And that's the great question, Jason. I would caution Democrats to not read too much into this and to not be overconfident in any way. I think a lot of work remains. But again, we have every legislator in St. Charles County is Republican, and they're overplaying their hand, and they don't represent the values of the people of St. Charles County. That obviously, like right to work and the things that, you know, Medicaid expansion and the things that we have voted on, and I think they will eventually pay a price for that. And yes, incrementally, this is a move back toward a more balanced representation for the people of St. Charles County. St. Charles County is not 80% Republican. It's not 60% Republican. You know, it might be, depending on the analysis, might be 55 or 53 or whatever. But, you know, it's had Democrats in the past, and it will have Democrats in the future. You know, being the last elected Democrat from St. Charles County is a distinction I would like to lose very, very quickly. So, yes, I think you'll see people like Cat Clayton in St. Charles and Jewel Kelly and some other great candidates that we have be successful in the House races, because people of St. Charles County have kind of figured out that the Republicans are They're hurting our county. When I was in the Senate, I'd do anything to protect St. Charles County. And I represented Pike and Lincoln and Warren and Montgomery as well, and I fought for those people.
Yeah, Pike's not worth saving. I'm kidding.
I love Pike.
I have friends who are from Bowling Green in Louisiana. Oh, yeah. I'm just kidding around, but continue.
I'm very grateful to the people of that area. But be that as it may, you know, I felt very parochial, very territorial about protecting my district. I cared a whole lot. I mean, we were going to build the Page Avenue Bridge if I had to rent a backhoe and get out there with a wrench myself. I mean, that we fought so hard to do that. And imagine St. Charles County and the region without the Route 364 now. But these legislators today, they're more interested in appealing to their right-wing base because they've got to win a Republican primary. That's why all the Republicans are afraid to do the right thing, because they got to win a Republican primary. And they're in lockstep with the state and national party if they're tied into MAGA or whatever. And they're not focused on what's best for the people of St. Charles County. And that's going to catch up with them.
So I'll do a counterfactual, because I think one of the reasons why Democrats have gotten to their level on both a county level and on a statewide level is even when they try to not be the same type of candidate as the National Democratic Party, people just associate them with National Democrats. And mm-hmm. National Democrats right now are perceived as very liberal, not only on social issues, but on spending issues, but especially on social issues. And that gets into a really thorny topic that a lot of people in the Missouri Democratic Party don't really want to openly discuss. But if you really, really, really feel that abortion is morally wrong, and that is a major issue for you, but you are like moderate on everything else, you may vote on Democrat all the way down the line, but you can't vote for a Democrat because of some of those issues. Do you think, though, that maybe that might be delatching a little bit now, just because the economy is becoming a bigger issue and there's a perception that Republicans are doing such a bad job on that, that might override some concerns about what I just mentioned?
No, I think you're right. I mean, as a Democrat, you know, I have some frustration that people perceive Democrat as the big spenders, when the data obviously is that the federal budget deficit and the national debt increases far more under Republican presidents, including the one sitting in the White House right now. That's always frustrating when Democrats are actually the most responsible with taxpayers' dollars. But that's a whole other conversation too. I mean, yes, the D behind your name on the ballot is a disadvantage in St. Charles County. It makes you're running uphill, and it's a problem, but much less so all of the time. I think people are incrementally beginning to realize who's really serving their best interest, and Democrats have to get people to stop voting against their own interests. Public school is the best example of that. People love their public schools. They want to support them. They've proved that time and time and time again, and you can't love your school and vote for a Republican who's doing everything they can to dismantle public education.
Kind of to round out this conversation, there's like three reasons why I think this is St. Charles County's political future is worth paying attention to. One is just on a micro level. If St. Charles County has more Democrats, that's going to change the way, like, especially if they're able to win in county races or state legislative races. It just changes just the overall conversation, where it's not just a Republican on Republican violence, so to speak. There's actually like a competitive ecosystem where Republicans have to appeal to a general election audience instead of a primary audience. That's one thing. But I think that there are broader consequences. The first is the congressional district. So I have no idea what's going to happen this year. We're recording this in April. It's possible the old map gets used this cycle, but I think it's inevitable that St. Charles County will be in one congressional district. It may not be this cycle. It may not be in 2028, but it'll be in 2031. Like, it's going to happen. And I think if St. Charles County is perennially competitive on a countywide level and you're pairing it with the city of Columbia, which is where it is now, that district becomes Ann Wagner-esque and it becomes perennially competitive. And I don't know if a Democrat can win that, but we're seeing in the second congressional district the effects of a perennially competitive congressional district. It means that it trickles down where Democrats are better funded and better organized. So that's not a question. That's an observation. But riff off that, because I think that I think that's really important long term for those counties that are in that congressional district.
I think if you ask most people on the street, do they feel that our government is working for them, they're gonna say that our political process is profoundly broken. And the gerrymandering is a big part of that. And I, you know, both parties certainly are to blame for that over the decades, over the centuries. But when you have, as you said, when you have non-competitive elections, when the only thing that matters is the primary, it's terrible for rational, common sense government. It's terrible for democracy. It's all you have to do is move to the far right or move to the far left and win a primary, and then there's no competition in the general election. That's bad government. It always results in bad government. And that's why I'm so encouraged to see St. Charles County, for example, become more competitive, and hopefully we'll have some really competitive general elections in November and some balance in the representation. Because when you have, you know, a county council that's all Republican, or every single legislator from the county be Republican, or Democrat for that matter, if that were the case, it's very unhealthy, and you get bad government, and people suffer because of that.
My other main thing is I've said for years that the way the Democrats are going to become a statewide party again is they have to do better in rural areas. They don't have to win rural areas, but they can't get 20% in rural counties. It's not workable. And they have to do better in fast-growing suburbs or exurban areas like St. Charles County. And to be very blunt here, I don't see a future where Democrats are going to make huge gains in Lincoln or Jefferson counties. Those counties are moving very far to the right, and I think it's going to take years, if not a decade, to move back. However, if they can gain ground in St. Charles County, which is the fastest growing county in the state and has over 400,000 people, and pair that with their gains in St. Louis County and Jackson County and Platt and Clay counties, and even places like Cass and Boone counties, they can at least be more competitive. I don't think that's enough to win a statewide election, but right now they're not even close to being a statewide party. Again, observation, not a question, but feel free to respond to it.
Well, I grew up in rural Missouri, and again, it's important for Missourians to stop voting against their interests. I think Republican policies are really hurting rural Missouri with regard to economic development, with regard to the access to health care, what we're seeing with the financial problems of rural hospitals, not to mention infrastructure, and certainly with regard to public schools. In a lot of small towns, the public school is the only thing holding the town together. It's the public schools is the only thing that unites us. And when Republicans are trying to fragmentize and defund public education, they're making a big mistake, not just for rural Missouri, but everywhere. I think, again, Democrats should not be overconfident or you know, read too much into this. There's a lot of work for them to do. But St. Charles County is the key. And I think when Prop RT, property tax freeze, went down by 59.2%, that message reverberates statewide. And I hope our Republican friends will realize what's brewing, what's percolating in St. Charles County, and not overplay their hand and not do so much damage to our schools and to our other essential services. And I think if they're smart, they'll take a message from this. I doubt they'll be wise enough to really learn from that lesson. They'll continue to move way too far to the right, where they don't represent the values of the people. And that's how Democrats, despite all of their faults and problems and procedural, their ability to grasp defeat out of the hands of victory will eventually gain ground and regain the position they once had. Because a balanced government would serve us so much better than just being dominated by one party that with no checks or balances.
That was former Democratic state lawmaker Ted House, who served both in the Missouri House and Missouri Senate. He also was elected to judgeships in St. Charles County. You can read and listen to all of our coverage of St. Louis, Missouri, and Metro East politics by going to stlpr.org. And be sure to sign up for the brand new Politically Speaking newsletter, which will launch on April 29th. You can sign up by going to stlpr.org/newsletters. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, and thank you so much for listening. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio, this is Politically Speaking.